This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Franciscan Health Hospitals in Dyer, Hammond, Munster, and other communities here in Northwest Indiana have had to make some changes as we've had a surge in the number of coronavirus cases here in the region. Let's find out the latest, and Robert Blaskowitz, who is spokesperson for Franciscan Health here in Northwest Indiana, is with us. And thanks for joining us on the program today.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Now, we obviously know that there have been more cases, and they've unfortunately maybe come across the state line. But in any case, we have a surge in cases for the coronavirus here in the region, and that's prompted some changes. Bring us up to date, if you will, on what Franciscan Health knows about what's happened with these cases as they affect Northwest Indiana, and now in particular the hospitals.
Certainly. We have seen a surge in cases, and that's led to most recently, a surge in hospitalization with more COVID. We're seeing more COVID patients at our hospitals. So in an effort to keep people safe, we've decided at our Dyer, Hammond, and Munster hospitals to make changes, specifically the biggest changes. We were previously allowing a single visitor to inpatients and critical care inpatients that were non-COVID. But now we're not allowing any visitors unless covered by other exceptions. And that applies to the emergency room as well.
Fill us in. There's quite an extensive list, I understand, of visitor restrictions now that officially took effect Friday evening. Tell us what they are and what people should know if they need to visit or if they need to come to the hospitals.
Certainly. Well, first of all, adult visitors will be allowed under specific circumstances. The hospitals are screening all visitors to determine if they're at risk for COVID, taking their temperatures, making sure they're masked. Everyone in the hospital is required to wear a mask, practice social distancing when possible, and practice good hand hygiene. So beyond that, though, as far as specific instances, as I mentioned, inpatients and critical care inpatients cannot have visitors now. Labor delivery. A laboring woman will be allowed one visitor, a spouse or partner during labor and delivery. In addition, a labor coach will be allowed. And then NICU, mother and significant other will be allowed to visit the child in the NICU with daily screening for temperature. Of course, with that social distancing and PPE usage required. As I mentioned in the emergency room, no visitors unless covered under other exceptions, though I will note that victims of sexual assault do have the right to have an advocate present, so that is an exception under the law. Outpatient ambulatory and surgery, no visitors unless covered by other exception. End-of-life situations, non-COVID end-of-life, one visitor will be allowed for the duration, a second allowed on a rotating basis with no more than two visitors at a time. For those with COVID at end of life, one visitor will be allowed to visit with full PPE, of course. And then for minors and patients unable to make decisions on their own, one visitor will be allowed for those patients. And then, of course, clergy, we do allow a patient or the representative to request a member of the Franciscan Spiritual Care Department or outside clergy be present as long as they're wearing that full PPE while in attendance.
Has there been any impact, as far as you all know, expect any impact on the clinics? Are they're not included in this, at least the hospitals are right now, but are taking just a close look at how the clinics are doing and maybe have to make some changes there if needed?
Certainly. Well, you know, the clinics were always very, they follow a lot of the same requirements as far as masking and visitate, you know, when you're in there with the doctor, we're just allowing the one patient in there, unless, of course, it's a minor, like those other situations, a minor or someone unable to make decisions for themselves, then, you know, we can have someone else in there. But that's an ongoing situation that we keep looking at that as well, how best to keep our clinics safe.
At what point, Bob, does it seem that from last week when the official word was made and the restrictions were taking effect on Friday, that they had to go far enough back, I suppose, to see how things were trending, to see if there were going to be problems or wanted to at least keep problems from happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's something that when the initial COVID pandemic hit and we went through these restrictions, we've pretty much been modifying them as we've gone along. So it's kind of been an ongoing developing situation. You know, it's always a balance. We know that there are benefits to having visitors in the room with a patient, just for their comfort, but also to be an advocate, to provide health history to the physicians, and also for the physician to educate them on how to care for the patient when they return home finally. So we know that's a balance, and we try to balance that out with, of course, keeping everyone safe and preventing spread of the virus, something that we've been doing also and that we have available is virtual, allowing people to have visits virtually with their loved ones, mm-hmm. providing the iPad so that they can at least see and talk to their loved ones, even if they're not allowed to have physical visitors.
Has Franciscan Health conferred or at least certainly looked to the other healthcare providers in Northwest Indiana to see what they're doing and if they are doing something similar?
Well, what we've done is with Franciscan, we have our 5 Northwest Indiana hospitals, but we're part of a network of 12 hospitals and throughout the state and on Olympia Fields in Illinois. So all of us are working together kind of on this and talking on a daily, weekly basis about how things are going in our individual hospitals. And it does vary. We have recommendations that we're using from others, so it kind of, but ultimately it's up to each individual hospital to make those decisions on their own. So they do vary from hospital to hospital.
Then you have an opportunity to talk with people about this. Obviously, there was probably a lot of people on Friday, the 23rd, when the restrictions took effect that probably were very surprised. Have you had a chance to talk with or gotten any feedback from any folks in the meantime since these all took effect?
You know, I think for the most part, our patients and families kind of understand why we're doing this. We're doing this to protect their health. And, of course, we try to make exceptions when they're needed. But ultimately, this is about preventing the spread of the virus. And, mm-hmm. and as cases surge in the region, we don't want to be a part of helping those cases surge. We want to prevent them.
Well, Bob, it sounds like that the hospitals have done the best they can do, I guess, to keep the people that are in the hospital being treated, but visitors and the like to be safe and to make sure that the disease certainly doesn't spread because of any visitors to the hospitals. Mm-hmm. And we'll be checking with you soon to see if there are any changes. And certainly I know you'll let us all know if there'll be any changes to come about here. We appreciate you spending time to talk about today.
Thank you, Chris.
Robert Blaskowitz is the spokesperson for Franciscan Health here in Northwest Indiana. And once again, the hospitals that Franciscan Health operates in Dyer, Hammond, and Munster are on the changes now because of on visitor restriction changes, we should say, because of the fact that the coronavirus pandemic has been changing and we've had a surge of cases here in Northwest Indiana. A teenager here in Northwest Indiana has taken the dream of a youth center to the next level. And let's find out more about the young lady who is interested in the youth center in the city of Gary. Aaliyah Stewart is with us. She's with her family members in Maryville right now. Thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
Give us an idea what got you started in thinking about a very ambitious project, because that's usually a youth center is something that a group of people end up having to start, but you've taken it on all by yourself, I guess, with some help from friends. Tell us how it all got started.
Well, first, giving honor to God, because it's all God that gives me the strength and the ideas to do the things that I do. Mm-hmm. I started my nonprofit organization at 14 years old, and now I'm 19, and I started it in honor of my two brothers that were killed due to senseless gun violence in Gary, Indiana. So what I wanted to do with the I Am Them Hope Youth Center was build a horizon for young people in the community to experience different and see different and to learn how to express their potential and purpose, especially if they've been through trauma. So the idea of the center was to bring something positive to Gary, to be a light, a beacon of light for young people in my community.
Now, I understand that you created the foundation. It's called the ASW Foundation, I guess, after the deaths of a couple of your brothers. Tell us, if you will, about Anthony White Jr. and about James Anderson and what kind of guys they were. And in turn, obviously, the tragedy is a good inspiration, but there had to be others, I'm sure.
Yes. Anthony was 16 years old when he was killed, and I was 7 years old. Anthony was so adorable. He was a ladies' man, very intelligent and athletic. He played basketball, baseball. He was into a lot of different things in Gary, like bitty ball, things like that, and he was graduating from Maryville High School. James, he was funny. That was the brother that was very funny. He was athletic as well. He played basketball at Bailey and a lot of different things like that. But James was very good with his hands. So trade was good for him. So that comes along with bringing trade into the youth center because he was very good with his hands, and he loved music. So he was just talented. Both of them were very talented and handsome and loving in their own ways.
I understand that besides being a dutiful sister to both these guys, you're also a pretty good motivational speaker. Tell us how you got started in that, and how did that lead you in a way to help get the support that you needed to be able to create the Youth Center, which is to become a project very soon?
Well, I decided to do influential speaking my senior year of high school. My mom made me do advanced composition as part of my classes. And I just absolutely loved the way that I could tell my story, but I wanted to tell it on more of an intellectual platform. You know, I wanted to be able to speak at churches and political events, but also I wanted to relate to young people in the neighborhood. So I started speaking in 2015. My first speaking engagement was at Theo Bowman High School, so thank you to the principal there that allowed me to come and speak at. I was 14 years old. And that was my first speaking engagement. And then from that point on, I started speaking at other places and traveling to speak. And then my senior year, that's when I came up with I wanted to be full-time influential speaker.
I know that the ASW Foundation has been very, very busy in here in Northwest Indiana and in Gary and Maryville area in particular to try to stop the very senseless gun violence that's going on in the communities. And that, I'm sure, led you to contacts that you made over time that, in turn, the organization helped be able to get the lease for the 6,100-square-foot building that you looked at 2301 Virginia Street. Tell us a little bit about the neighborhood where the youth center will be built and how the project is coming along.
The project is going along great. We're working right now to get everything going and just trusting God with everything. Due to COVID-19, we've had to delay some things, but they're not denied. So that's good. And then we're right behind the Color Door Gary Housing Authority. So we're right behind those apartments. And we're very excited to get the kids to come over. We're excited because we want to be a part. And so we're just working and praying and getting everything ready and done so that when COVID-19 is over, we can hopefully hurry and open so that the kids can have something to do.
That's a great opportunity to bring young people in since you're so close to the area where many of them live. And what kind of programs would you like to set up in the center itself once it's completed and ready to use?
So we have a couple of different programs that we'll be running. Early childhood development is one. Tutoring, college and career readiness, leadership and social development, engineering, media and technology, athletics and recreational, visual and performing arts, and we're also working on the name of the program to teach students about healthy choices in the field of eating, understanding that you are what you eat, and your body is tired and drained by the things that we're putting inside of our body.
Now, obviously, an organization has to be able to raise the money. You have raised some quite a bit already, $20,000, going toward some of the important things to start out with, building permits and supplies and startup costs and the like. But you're still out there looking for support. Tell us how support you're seeking and how it's coming along so far there.
a lot of people have been donating. So for anyone that's listening that would love to donate and support our vision or even donate time, come volunteer, come help or anything like that, please visit our website, which is iamthem.org, iamthem.org. To donate, you can go on our iamthem.org website and click the donate button, and it will take you to our GoFundMe. And from there, you can donate. If you just want to volunteer, you can go under community service on iamthem.org and send us an email, and I'll respond to it.
Well, Aaliyah, when do you hope that if things go well and the pandemic subsides a bit and more work gets to be done soon, when do you hope to have the youth center opened up?
I'm hoping towards the fall. If not the fall, towards the end of the year. But whenever it happens, it's going to be great.
Well, Aaliyah, thank you for spending time with us to tell us more about yourself and about the ASW Foundation that you've created and all of the work that has happened so far up to now and the selection of a site for a youth center in Gary. And we wish you the best, and we'll offer a few prayers as well, too, to help push things along. Thank you very much for talking with us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. This is the current enrollment period, open enrollment period is what it's actually called, for Medicare. And let's find out more about it from the boss. We have with us on the line from Washington, D.C., the administrator of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Seema Verma. Ms. Verma, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is kind of exciting time for you and for millions of Americans. If you will bring us up to date for people that are not familiar with the vast expanse of Medicare, what are we looking forward to as far as coverage is concerned for those who people are enrolled for the next year for 2021?
Well, great question. I will tell you from day one, the president's been very focused on strengthening, protecting the Medicare program, and he made it very clear to me that he wanted us to do whatever we could to deliver better care, lower costs, and more choices. And so after all these years of work, we're seeing the results of those efforts. And I can tell you that premiums have gone down significantly. In Indiana in particular, they've gone down by about 52% since the president started. So that's a significant price decrease, putting money back in the pockets of our seniors. Also good news on the drug coverage front, where we're seeing premiums have gone down by 12%. And this year, the president is offering new plans that provide insulin for only $35 a month, which is a massive savings. On average, that's about 66% savings for our seniors. So that's very significant as well. The other thing to mention is that the president has also provided more flexibility to these plans. And the idea here is to look at each person as an individual and recognize that they have different needs. It could be that somebody is, you know, leaving the hospital and they just need some help in their homes for a few days. So maybe they need meal service or they need somebody to look in on them. It could be that they need a ramp to be installed in their home. So the president is allowing these health plans to offer more flexible benefits. So that is a tremendous change that we haven't seen before. I can tell you there's at least one health plan, for example, in Florida that's just offering pest eradication services across the board to all of their beneficiaries. So it varies by plan and depends on where you live and what benefits are being offered.
Give us, if you will, an idea here in Indiana, some of the HMOs that are available out there. They come in various sizes and types, but they all follow the same basic formula, I guess, to make sure that people are covered under Medicare, but they also get the advantages that they possibly can. How are the things structured here in Indiana?
Sure. Well, you know, Indiana, like most states, offers these types of HMO plans. The things to look for when you are selecting a plan is, first of all, you want to make sure that the doctor that you're seeing or the doctors that you see are included in your plan. One of the important features that we've done that we're allowing for this year with Plan Finder is that you can automatically upload all the medications that you're taking. So you don't have to do this manually like you did in the past. We've updated that Plan Finder tool for the first time in 10 years. So it should make it easier for people. So look at your medications, look at the doctors, and then look at the benefits that the plan is offering. And the system will allow you to calculate your out-of-pocket costs, and then that way you can make a determination between your premiums and your out-of-pocket expenses about what's going to work best for you.
Mm-hmm. Here in Indiana, I know a lot of organizations like Humana, for example. There are others, United Healthcare, or some of the other national commercially known Advantage plans that are out there. But how do they seem to help Hoosiers in particular to be able to find the best deals and best places they spend their hard-earned money when they have to deal with their health care?
Yeah, well, Hoosiers are definitely going to get a great surprise when they go look for plans because the prices have dropped significantly. And when you go on Plan Finder, you can look, you can kind of compare the prices across plans. You can look at the different types of benefits. But I think Indiana has a robust offering. I think the other important thing to note is that under the president's leadership, we are offering about 71% more plans. So you have a lot more choices than you've had in the past. So it really allows you to pick what's going to work best for you. I think the other thing to note is that on our Plan Finder tool, there is also information and some new tools that help you determine whether Medicare Advantage or the traditional program is right for you. And it asks you a few questions about your personal situation and then compares the prices between the traditional program and Medicare Advantage.
We're talking with Seema Verma, who is the administrator for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services in Washington, D.C., about the open enrollment period, which is underway now, and it continues on through October into November. One of the other points I know that people are certainly watching about, and you mentioned at the outset of our conversation, was about the cost of insulin. Bring us up to date with how Part D, as it's called in Medicare language, is dealing with these days and how it's improved going into 2021.
Well, drug coverage obviously has been an important priority for the president. A lot of progress has been made. We've had a record number of generics approved by the FDA, and we've made a lot of changes to the Part D programs. And because of that, we're nationally seeing a decrease in premiums for Part D coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's important for seniors to know they can get a Medicare Advantage plan and a Part D plan, or they can get one plan that combines both pieces together. That being said, I think the new important thing this year is that we have these new plans. There's about 1,600 of them nationwide that do provide insulin for about $35 a month or less. So that's a very significant savings. You've probably heard the stories, as I've heard, of people traveling to Canada or people rationing their insulin. The president's been deeply concerned about that, very committed to this issue. And so he instructed us to come up with this new plan. So we're very excited about it. I think for the number of diabetics that we have in the Medicare program, this is really going to be life-saving and certainly going to put some dollars back in their pockets.
Well, I know with the situation, people can't go to Canada, at least not now, because the pandemic's still underway, and that's probably taking the wind out of the sails, so to speak, on that idea. And along the same sort of note here, you're also, I know, a member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. Have you seen, from your standpoint, with watching the Medicaid and the Medicare programs, any major problems? Are we trying to stay on track as best as we can, even though the pandemic's still underway?
Yeah, well, we're certainly seeing an uptick in cases, and so that's concerning across the board for both of these programs, because, as you know, they serve some of our most vulnerable citizens, Medicare in particular, mm-hmm. you know, with our over 65 population. And the public health measures that we've been recommending are the same. It's washing your hands, wearing a mask, being socially distant. I think we're getting to the point as a country where we're tired. You know, these things are not easy, and they've had a significant impact on our day-to-day life. But, you know, rest assured, I think we're making very strong progress on the vaccine. We have a number of them in phase 3 trials. We're also, with Operation Warp Speed, we've already started to produce these vaccines. So if they've been deemed safe and effective, they'll be available immediately. We're already working on distribution plans. And the president's been very clear that he wants seniors to be prioritized. We've had a lot of emphasis on our nursing home population. We just announced a deal with Walgreens and CVS that when the vaccine becomes available, they'll go in and immunize our seniors and other folks living in nursing homes. So, and then there's also, I think, good news on therapeutics and some of the new treatments. As you know, remdesivir was one of the treatments which is just approved by the FDA. So even though we are seeing an uptick in the number of cases, I think it's important for the American public to know that we are also making a lot of progress in how we treat the virus. We've made progress. The mortality rate has declined significantly, you know, in some age groups, almost 70-80%. So that's also something to remember. I think it hopefully it gives people a picture of what the future may entail, that there is hope, vaccine and new treatments are there. But in the meantime, it's very important that we all adhere to those public health practices of washing your hands and being socially distant and wearing a mask. That is the best thing that we can do to protect ourselves, loved ones, and the community.
Now, Ms. Irma, once again, we're in the open enrollment period for Medicare. And give us the primer. Where can we find out the information? If we have questions, who we can get in touch with, how we can do so online?
Sure. So you can call the 1-800-MEDICARE line. They can help you. They can also direct you to local resources. There's agents and brokers in everyone's community. There's also volunteers that can help you. So we can direct you to those resources. You can also just go online, medicare.gov, for the first time in 10 years. We've updated the website, so it's a lot easier for people to use. And, you know, the deadline for open enrollment is December 7th, so we encourage you to get started. Most people are actually having an easier time with it because of the updates that we've made to the website, but lots of new choices, lower prices, and better care for our seniors under the president's leadership.
Seema Verma is the administrator for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the national program based in Washington, D.C. And Ms. Verma, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversations to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
I was born and raised in Little Village, Chicago. It's near southwest side of Chicago, inner city, as society likes to call it, urban. So you have gang territories around there. Also like the viaduct bridges that, you know, the trains go on. That's like you're entering an African-American neighborhood. So it's really divided. It's really sad to know that, you know, you're trying to play basketball one day and you can't go to that specific park due to specific gang territories. So unfortunately, you know, it is divided, and sometimes when you cross that border or that imaginary border, you know, you could possibly suffer some deadly consequences. My brother is involved with gangs in Chicago. He has been involved since he was 19. He's the first person I ask for, and he's the first person I worry about, because I know that the things he's doing is really life-threatening. That does paint a negative image to our family as well. I know people like to talk. La gente le gusta el chisme. Y eso me afecta a mí, por my image. Yo quiero parar. Quiero hacer un estudiante. No quiero estar involucrado con gangas. Porque tengo mucha gente que espera mucho de mí. I don't like being called, like my brother's nickname. I don't like being called Lil and his nickname. You know what I mean? It could be one day that you have another gang member and he's just walking around, but I don't even know him. And then somebody calls me that and he's gonna assume I'm gang related. And that's something I don't wanna go through. That's something I don't wanna put my family through either. Although he is really, really, really tough on me on keeping my grades up, going to school, doing the right things. So he's not necessarily impacting me in a negative way. Besides, you know, me worrying a lot for him, he's also motivating me to do better. And my relationship with him is really good, actually. I do carry a weight on me due to the fact of my where I'm from and how I look. I know people like to bring others down and say that they won't achieve the things they're achieving due to the fact that back home you're facing this and you're facing that. So it is a big weight. Y no nada más es el peso de académico de mis grados, pero también es el peso que tengo con la gente en mi comunidad. Yo cargo ese peso porque yo quiero ser successful. Yo quiero agarrar una beca, quiero agarrar mi diploma, quiero hacer una carrera buena. Y a veces eso es imposible porque uno vive mal. mal como no tiene suficiente dinero para mandar a sus hijos a la escuela. Y yo cargo ese peso porque yo estoy representando nada más a mi familia, pero también estoy representando a la villita Chicago, porque mucha gente no tiene muchas cosas bonitas que decir. Y yo quiero ser esa persona que digan, bueno, pues Luis vivía en la esquina de La Homan. Ese es un territorio de gangas, pero él de todos modos lo hizo a agarrar sus diplomas. Por eso yo cargo ese peso, porque si un día llega que yo no vengo para atrás a la universidad, pues todo lo que yo estaba hablando se empieza a reducir y gente ya no me conoce y me conoce como un perdedor. Y eso es el peso que yo cargo. That's the weight I carry of my community. I don't want to be a failure. I don't want to let my people down. So the things I do is not only for my family, it's for them as well.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for joining us. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we will bring you, among other topics, the question about whether there are supernovas in outer space. We know there are, but how are they made? And do they go on forever? Well, we'll talk with a Purdue University astronomist and physicist about that. That's one of our program notes for tomorrow. We hope you'll join us.